since I've been here.
You know, with an introduction like that, I'm always wondering, I'm excited to hear what I'm going to say too, because it's always kind of hard to follow an introduction like that. Let's see.
It's
very, very pretty.
Okay.
And you have to do this a few times.
Oh.
And you bend those however you want them.
Cool. Now I can see. Something with age, the eyes, they seem to be...
I don't know. Is the recorder on, Millie?
Yes, I think so. Paul?
How's that?
Please check them, but I think they are.
Oh, the recorders. Oh, cool.
Everybody, if you would ever choose to look at the website called Millie'sCorner.com, you can hear some of the talks on there.
That's right. They put me up there.
Millie'sCorner.com.
You know, being in January, Christmas just passing and with Mimi passing, I'm so sad. For us, really, for me, because I miss her. She's such a fabulous lady. Is a fabulous lady. And, you know, there's this idea that she's taken the passage to the other side and she's free of the body. In a sense, she's born again in her own way. She's gone through the tunnel and she's in the presence of Almighty God. And I remember a few months ago, I don't track time that well, but when she walked in here, it was one of the most magical experiences. And I remember Barbara looked, I think now, and I even get a little teary-eyed, I looked back and she was like an angel. I mean, she had the radiance of an angel. And to think that, you know, she passed New Year's Eve is... so sad, but that's the reality. We all live and we all die, and in the body, in the flesh, as it were. And so, with Christmas in December, being a story about Jesus the Christ and His birthday coming into the world, I wanted to share from a scripture in 1 Corinthians. And before I do, I want to just talk a little bit about the guy who wrote it. Because when you read an author, it's really cool to find out where he came from. I've been reading this book called The New Pentagon's Map, A Blueprint for Action, And I think this guy, Thomas Barnett, is one of the most incredible futurists of our day. I think he will be the futurist of the post-Cold War era. And not to get off on that too far, but I'm doing a documentary on the reconstruction of Iraq. So I've kind of gotten in my brain in this geopolitical world. Fascinating stuff. And when I picked up this guy's book, I started to read the preface and about the author. And as I learned about him, the first chapter made so much more sense to me because I knew where he was coming from. I knew the context that he was coming from. And so as we think about 1 Corinthians, which was a town probably not a lot unlike Southern California, there are lots of cultures, lots of worldviews. It was a port city. They had a lot of commerce. It was a wild city. They had all kinds of influences going on in the town. And decades before he wrote this, Paul was a very astute Jew. He was a Pharisee. Pharisee wasn't necessarily a bad thing. They were very learned. Paul the Apostle, Saul was his name, was a scholar. In fact, as I understand it, he was one of the leading scholars of his day. I think there was a council called the Sanhedrin. With 70 of the wisest men in the culture in Israel. Paul was one of them. And he was so entrenched in the way that he thought, he had his doctrine down, he had his wisdom down in such a a box format that when this message of Jesus the Christ came, he was really upset. Because he thought he thought Jesus was blasphemous, basically. He didn't fit the picture of the Messiah that Paul was raised in his mind to believe that would be. Paul had this ultra dialed in view of what God and man should be, or the relationship between God and man. And in a lot of ways, it was very exterior. I mean, you did this, and it was about what you did rather than who you were. The real difference of, you know, if I do the right things, then obviously I am the right person. But the truth is, that's not it. You can do all the right things and totally be somebody else on the inside. You can front it. In fact, you know, I find it very interesting in the Bible when they talk about hypocrisy. The original Greek word is the word they use for a theater mask. And when an actor would come out on stage, he'd put the theater mask and play this other character. And so when Jesus called the Pharisees a bunch of hypocrites, and he said, you're like whitewashed tombs, there's no life in you, he was saying, you do all the right things, but you miss the point. Jesus came to revolutionize that idea. The Jews at the time were looking for a political solution to their spiritual problem. They were looking for a Messiah that would overthrow the Roman government, because they were subservient. And so Paul came from this place where he had this very strong, and I think maybe in our culture today, you might even call it a fundamentalist point of view. Very, very, very rigid. And it's interesting because for those of you that know me a little bit, I actually come from a background where I was raised Episcopalian. I had the great born-again experience, and I'm thankful for that, but I understand that fundamentalist mentality. And then when my father died, what, 5-6 years ago, and somehow I landed here at the church and began to realize that there's a whole other dimension in the dynamic between heaven and earth and the veil being open, it kind of took me in a similar way that Paul had the experience of when he was walking on the road to, I think it was Emmaus, and he was so ticked off that he was persecuting Christians. In fact, he had put, I think he was about to kill him. He was that upset about it. And as he walked down the road, because this new way of thinking didn't fit his particular his way of thinking, he had an experience. It's very interesting because it was an experience. And you can't deny the experience. And I know when I was, you know, when I studied the Bible, and God, it was decades ago, in a formal setting, it was all so much about the doctrine was so important. The form was so important. But when you look at the experience of the Apostle Paul, it was an experience that changed his life. And as he walked down the roadway, a light out of heaven shone on him. And he looked up, said, Lord, is that you? And you're like, Lord, is that you? What's going on? Who could this be? And so he had this experience with Jesus the Christ, whom he had heard of, who lived, died, was crucified, rose from the dead, and ascended into heaven. Paul experienced that in an experiential, very real, and powerful way. It changed his life. So he went from being this very powerful figure in his culture, both in their religious world, to becoming a tent maker and going and relearning the scriptures in a way that would he could understand Jesus the Christ being something completely different than who he thought. The Jews were looking for a political solution to their internal problems. Nothing wrong with political solutions. Nothing wrong with geopolitics. We need to get it right in America. And I think we're going in the right direction. Read the book if you have interest in geopolitics. Fascinating. Mind-bending. Shifts every paradigm I've had in the last 10 years. And that's good for an old guy like me because, you know, we get set in our ways and you think it's this way and, by God, just like Paul being, you know, a fundamentalist, you know, you think. So I'm grateful for the shift. So Paul has this experience and all of a sudden he goes around and he starts sharing this with the Christians of that new world. And so he writes a letter to the church at Corinth, which they had great conversions and there was great magnetism and people were coming after this new thing called the Way and they heard about this Christ and they were having these experiences and they were, you know, they were having all kinds of experiences. They spoke in tongues and they had all kinds of mischief going on in the church. It was colorful. To say the least, it was colorful. And the church was having some challenges, and so Paul writes to them, and let me just read some verses here, and then if I can make a few comments on it. 1 Corinthians 1, he says, "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are separated from God. But to us who are being made whole," that's the word saved, it's a sense of wholeness, it's the idea of a ship that was shipwrecked and put back into 1,000 pieces. When Paul uses it in Romans 1, it's about wholeness, being put back together, and that's the business that God is in, of healing us and putting us back together so we can be the best version that he created us to be. So he goes on to say that but to us who are being made whole, it's the power of God, the crucifixion. For it is written, "I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate." Then he goes on, he says, "Where's the wise man? Where's the scholar? Where's the philosopher of this age? Is not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was proclaimed to save, make whole those who believe. Jews demanded miracles, miraculous signs, and the Greeks looked for wisdom, but we proclaim Christ crucified, a stumbling block to the Jews, and foolishness to the Gentiles." He goes on and he says, "For the foolishness of God is wiser than man's wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than man's strength." And he goes on a few verses later, he says, "You know, when I came to you, brothers and sisters, I did not come with eloquence or superiority or superior wisdom as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. I came to you in weakness and fear." Now here was a guy that was on the top of his game decades earlier. He was a leader in his culture. He says, "I came to you in weakness and fear and with much trembling. My message and my proclamation were not with wise and persuasive words, but with a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on men's wisdom, but on God's power." I think the point I want to get across tonight is that in the Greek culture, they had a worldview that was kind of a closed system. It didn't allow for the idea, conceptually, that the living God could come from eternity and enter time-space history. The Christian message is that Jesus, part of God, came as a baby, entered our world, lived and walked among us, died crucified, rose from the dead, ascended into heaven to create what I call, in common day vernacular, a bridge. I call Jesus the bridge. Because I think we get caught up a lot of times in this whole thing of you're sinners and you're bad, and it's, you know, it's, there's a whole connotation to it that I don't think is really biblical. I think that the whole notion of what Jesus Christ did and his intent and his mission was to create a bridge to open up the heavens between us and God. So the Greeks didn't have this worldview that they thought it was foolish. And it's funny because Paul says, okay, I'm a fool for Christ. And I remember when I was a young Christian, I thought that meant that you would go out and share tracts with people and piss them off and they'd call you foolish. You know, I thought you were supposed to do that. It's a sad story, but that's true. But the reality is, in the Greek mindset, it just wasn't something that was part of their worldview. The Jews didn't get the miraculous Messiah that conquered the Romans. The Greeks didn't have the worldview that they could accept this supernatural experience. And so here you look at Paul, who was a scholar, he was a wise man, and he was a philosopher, and he says, where are they? And he was one of them. So it has special significance as he spoke. He says, like, I was all those things, but where are they? It makes no difference. Because the reality is that the solution to our spiritual life is internal. It's not out here. It's not in great political systems of thought. Those aren't bad, but they're external. It's not about signs and wonders on the outside. It's not even about getting angel messages or messages from the other side. And those are encouragement things, yes. But ultimately, it's about what goes on in our interior world. That's the only thing we've got that nobody can take away from us. Whether we're without our eyesight, like the Apostle Paul, whether we're dying of cancer and we're going through the transition, there's nobody that can take away our spirit, which lives on forever. And so Jesus the Christ, in this whole message of Christ crucified, I call it the bridge, was about the message that God intervened in our world to communicate to us, to open up the heavens, so that we could receive the Holy Spirit and have that comfort and that divinity, that thing, that energy. You know, we have lots of words for it. But that thing inside, that peace that gives us the peace. And he's saying, look inside. That's what Christ came for, was to open up that inner deal. It's like the toll bridge. You know, it's free sailing all the way now because of the pathway that Jesus the Christ created for us. And so, as I think about maybe some practical thoughts or applications, Jesus came into our world to affect us. He walked among us. He taught us. He constantly was saying, look inside. Spend time with your Father in heaven. It's inside. It's not in the external world. And so, if you think about it, think about the people in your world. Think about the people that you might be able to look at the opportunity to intervene in their lives and make a difference. It might be somebody you work with. It might be a neighbor. It might be somebody you meet at the grocery store, you know, coincidentally. But I think as people of God, people on a spiritual pathway, so much of God's blessing is when we look from the inside to serve those on the outside. And we kind of get it mixed up sometimes. We're always looking on the outside for the answer, where the answer's on the inside. And to serve, we need to look outward. And so as we enter in kind of this new world, or this new year, I just want to encourage all of you, and I look, you know, it's like I point a finger out and I've got three coming back at me, is don't ever give up on good works. And Mother Teresa said, you know, keep doing good works. Just do it. If you build, build. If you're a contractor, build. Whatever your talents, keep doing good. Don't be discouraged. And it seems like those last couple of weeks, you know, I've been bombarded with all kinds of different things. And yeah, you kind of get emotionally drained and you're kind of in that spot where you're just really tired. I think as I was sitting even earlier today thinking about speaking tonight, the idea was, the message that came to me was, okay, you need to recharge, but don't quit being a servant. Look for opportunities to make a difference in other people's lives, because think about it. Each of us have had people that have made differences in our lives. And so it's kind of that pay it forward idea. So with that in mind, remember the prayer of Jabez? I spoke on it a few months ago. Jabez said, God bless me indeed. He said, bless me big time. Because blessing is it's a gift. It's not about something you earn or you deserve. It's about the gift. And I've shared this, and I don't want to be redundant, but I always like to hear the story myself. And it's the story of the lady and we'll make it a couple because it's a story. They get up to the pearly gates, and St. Peter's there, and they're walking around, and yeah, their name's on the list and all that jazz, and looking at the streets of gold, and over in the corner there's a warehouse, and he says, what's that over there, St. Peter? Nah, you want to go there. He starts walking. No, really, what's over there? Nah, you don't want to go there. Look over there, there's this fine waterfall and all that. No, what's over there? He says, okay, fine. He goes over there. It's like a Costco. Everybody know Costco? All kinds of warehouse and goodies in there. Boxes. And they go up and down, and they get to the aisle that says Joe. Big J and Jill. The boxes right next to each other. I just made that up, by the way. And they said, well, what's our name doing on those boxes? And St. Peter kind of looked down and he said, well, those are all the blessings that God had for you, but you never asked for them. Now, isn't that a cool thought? And sometimes we get guilty like, oh, you know, I don't deserve it. But we're intended by our very design to be blessed so that we can give. We're intended by our design to be rivers rather than dams. We're intended by design to bless others and cause no pain, as it says in the prayer of Jabez, but to help people. And you can't give what you don't have. So ask God for his blessing. And then he goes on to say, keep your hand upon me, keep me from evil. Enlarge my territory. That sounds like real estate to me. And then he says, so that I may not cause any pain to others. And just by way of reminder, Jabez, his name, meant pain. So he's born into some kind of pain. So he who lived in pain and had afflictions wanted blessings so that he could then bless others and cause no pain. God is an abundant God. We're his vessels. We've got to make sure that we keep enough time to where we get centered and we get in that place and we say, God, bring it on. But not so we can be a dam, so we can be a river and we can touch other people and bless other people.